A U.S. senator is calling for American military intervention in Venezuela. Republican Rick Scott of Florida said this week that he wants the military at the Venezuelan border to remove barriers put up by President Nicolas Maduro so that humanitarian aid can get through. He also wants the military to deliver that aid. Scott's comments mark some of the strongest language used by a U.S. official about Venezuela. Others, including Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, have called for the Venezuelan military to overthrow Maduro and have expressed support for opposition leader Juan Guaido. Here's Pompeo on Fox Business Network yesterday.
We'd prefer a peaceful transition of government there, where Maduro leaves and a new election is held. But the president has made clear, in the event that there comes a moment, and we'll all have to make decisions about when that moment is, and the president will ultimately have to make that decision, he's prepared to do that if that's what's required.
The U.S. has a long history of getting involved in Central American affairs dating back to the mid-1800s. So why does America feel such a vested interest in Latin America, and are there lessons from the past that could apply today? Eduardo Gamarra is a professor of political science and founding director of the Latino Public Opinion Forum at Florida International University. Eduardo, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much. A pleasure to be with you.
Well, before we dig into that history, Eduardo, let's look at some of the events of this week. Juan Guaido this week calling for a military uprising, encouraging his supporters to force Maduro out of power, a prominent political opponent of Maduro out of prison suddenly, now an arrest warrant out for him. What is your read on the latest there right now?
Well, the situation is so fluid that, in fact, I think it's sort of risky to make any kind of prediction or even any kind of assessment of what's going on the ground. It looks like the government of Nicolás Maduro, to a certain extent, has at least managed to survive this week and has done so with the support of key sectors of the military. In fact, I think one of the things that we can readily conclude is that Guaido's effort to essentially draw the military into his ranks has fallen far short of its objectives, and not as many military people moved into his camp. And so Maduro still controls the bulk of the military and therefore controls the repressive apparatus of the Venezuelan state. At the same time, I think it's important to note that that Guaido has managed to exert some significant amount of support on the streets. And for now, for 3 days running, people are on the street and people are demonstrating and people are obviously demanding an end to the Maduro government. So the situation is very fluid, and I think it's very risky to predict an outcome in the next in the next few days,
sure,
even weeks or months.
Now let's turn to the U.S. role. So far, what has the American government done when it comes to, as you say, this very fluid situation in Venezuela?
Well, you know, it's also difficult to understand what the U.S. has actually done. It's very clear that the U.S. has taken a position, a bipartisan position, of supporting Mr. Guaido, and that the administration, especially the State Department, the National Security Council, the Defense Department, and so on, and Treasury, have been key in imposing sanctions on individuals and have also been important in at least articulating a position that all options are on the table. But in terms of, for example, concrete assistance, whether it's funding, whether it's military assistance of any kind to Guaido and his followers, nothing is really obvious. And it seems obviously that that one of the things that Guaido needs above anything else is access to funds to be able to keep his movement going. At the same time, I think that the U.S., U.S. officials are, and I'll use the word very cautiously, I think are irresponsibly calling for military intervention, especially given the fluidity of the situation.
Talking to Eduardo Gamarra from Florida International University, looking at the latest events in Venezuela, the U.S. role there, and a look at the U.S. history in Central and South America. Eduardo, the United States from the mid-1800s or so, for a long period of time, intervened economically, militarily, in a lot of ways in various countries in Central and South America. A big picture, we don't have time to get into all the specifics, but big picture, can you talk about the American role and how it's affected that region?
Well, you know, I think we don't have to go back to the 1800s. I think the most immediate recollection is the U.S. support for military governments, particularly military governments on the right, especially governments, for example, like General Pinochet in Chile, General Banzer in Bolivia, the Argentine military juntas and so on, that were plagued with gross human rights violations. So that's the most immediate memory. But I think we're talking about a very different epoch, and we're talking now, in fact, of a rather strange situation, because we have a government that's on the right supporting Mr. Guaido, who's a social democrat on the ground, right? And in fact, I was listening to a senator from Alabama saying, questioning, you know, why are we supporting a socialist, and how do we know that he's not going to become a dictator, right? So I think the situation is different, but yet at the same time, what I said earlier, we invading, intervening militarily in Venezuela in any way is not going to bring about immediate change, and it's likely to lead to a protracted conflict. Venezuela is not Panama as we invaded Panama in 1989. It's not Grenada as we invaded Grenada in 1983. These are very different circumstances. This is a very different country. And you have the direct involvement of Russia and China, which make things even dramatically different.
Talk about that involvement from Russia and China. What are we seeing there?
Well, again, it's also quite interesting. And you know, a lot of people are going back to the Cold War and saying this is the Cold War all over again. But Russia is a capitalist country, and Russia has enormous economic interests in Venezuela, and it's had them at least for two decades, especially in the oil industry. Russia essentially owns the oil industry in Venezuela, and that's saying a lot. Venezuela still holds the world's largest oil reserves. Really, it has oil reserves spanning 300 years. So Rosneft, this private corporation that counts on the support of the Russian government, is extraordinarily important. And so dealing with Russia is no longer dealing with it in an ideological sense, but in a business sense. And at the same time, what you have with the Chinese are very, very invested Venezuela, and Venezuela has an enormous debt to China, which is paying off, by the way, through the production of oil. And the production of oil in Venezuela has dropped to about 800,000 barrels a day, which is really peanuts in comparison to what it has the capacity to produce. So the interests that you have there are not those traditional ideological interests. They're now fundamentally capitalist interests, and I think if the U.S. doesn't, from a policy perspective, if we try to keep framing this in Cold War terms, I think you have to understand the nature of the problem.
Is there a suspicion in a country like Venezuela and the surrounding region of any American involvement, just given some of that history that we've talked about of past invasions?
Well, it's... to my knowledge, you know, we used to have a very significant military relationship with Venezuela in the 90s. Venezuela was one of the only democracies in Latin America which had F-15s, you know, and was readily supplied with replacement tools and so on. But since 2007, the Russians have become Venezuela's primary military ally. Most of the military equipment in Venezuela today is Russian, and therefore that relationship that the U.S. used to have with the Venezuelan military has been gone for at least two decades, and the U.S. though has been, you know, on the crossing the border into Colombia, the United States has been an extraordinary military ally of Colombia, both through the Plan Colombia in the late 1990s and throughout the 2000s. But really, in terms of the training of the military there, the training of the police and so on, in the fight against drug trafficking and in the fight against organized crime.
We're talking about the U.S., Latin America, and the latest events in Venezuela with Eduardo Gamarra, professor of political science and founding director of the Latino Public Opinion Forum at Florida International University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What, if anything, should the United States be doing when it comes to Venezuela? The idea of military intervention has been floated by some officials. Do you think that would be a good idea, or do you share our guests' serious concerns about it? Do you think America has been too involved with Central American conflicts over the last century, or have our actions been appropriate? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about U.S. involvement in Latin America with Eduardo Gamarra and the latest news in Venezuela. He's a professor of political science and the founding director of the Latino Public Opinion Forum at Florida International University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Big picture, has American intervention in Central America and South America generally been good or bad for the region and American interests? How, if at all, should the U.S. get involved with Venezuela, or should we stay out? What questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to a caller now. Stevenson is with us in Wauwatosa. Stevenson, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. This is a very interesting program. I think there's a bigger picture, as you gentlemen said, to look at that, because the U.S. presence in the Caribbean has some lack of presence in the Caribbean is also becoming an issue, because Venezuela went through this ALBA program, and then they have some of the smaller states, you know, who are struggling with the economy, and then giving them oil and all kind of thing going on with them. And I can specifically talk about the island of Dominica, where during the invasion of Grenada, like Dominica's Prime Minister then Eugenio Chavez actually came and talked and gave the U.S. President then Reagan, they're okay to go into Grenada, and she has always stands for democracy. Now, you have a situation where the Prime Minister of Dominica, Rizvan Skerrit, is following the very same footsteps of Chavez and Maduro. An election is coming up soon in that island, and the way that it is doing kind of mutilating people and buying votes and all this kind of thing, I think the U.S. needs to be aware of that, because we are a political party, the Dominican Freedom Party, which has a great relationship with the Republican Party of the United States.
Stevenson, I'm going to jump in. So worries about how U.S. action in Venezuela could affect other countries in the Caribbean, Eduardo.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what his question was going to be, but I think the reality is that over the course of the last two decades, Venezuela developed some very, very significant ties with the Caribbean, with countries that were both on the right and on the left, and especially small island nations like Dominica, like St. Kitts and Nevis, and so on, and but also countries like Jamaica, the Dominican Republic, Haiti, and small countries in Central America, largely through a program called Petrocaribe, which was essentially giving oil at a very, very low price and, in fact, allowing these countries to convert the oil into cash, giving, for example, Cuba especially some extraordinarily significant amounts of cash over the years, the Dominican Republic, Haiti, at least for Haiti to the tune of $2 billion, the Dominican Republic, $4 billion. And the numbers on Cuba range as high as $16 billion and so on. But the reality is that relationship, given the mismanagement of the Venezuelan economy, given the collapse of the Venezuelan economy, which the IMF says today has 10,000,000% hyperinflation, those alliances have collapsed. And those countries are now, with a couple of exceptions, right? Those countries are, in fact, supporting the U.S. position and the position of the Lima Group, which is the group of countries that has essentially broken off relations with Maduro and is supporting Guaido. So the Caribbean is also in flux, but largely it's in flux because Petrocaribe is gone, that very strategic relationship that garnered many friends for Maduro and for Chavez before him. That relationship is gone.
Thanks for that call, Stevenson. We'll go now to Nathan in Madison. Nathan, hi.
Hi, good afternoon, sir. I was just calling to just ask a quick question to the guest. This situation is very dear to me. My wife's from Venezuela, and we have family down in Venezuela. And unfortunately, the locals in, you know, from Caracas to Ciudad Bolivar on the Brazilian border, they actually are hoping for some type of help from the United States from a military standpoint, because the violence and the repression is daily. The blackouts and the water shortages are intermittent. And without any type of international assistance, it'd be preferable to have a coalition, obviously, of various allies in the neighborhood, you know, Lima Group, all the members of South America. But without the impetus of the United States, I just don't see anything happening in Venezuela to be the next Cuba.
Nathan, thanks for the call. Nathan saying family members in Venezuela, he's hearing them being hopeful for some kind of U.S. intervention.
Yes, let me, you know, I feel for Nathan. I have close family, close friends in Venezuela, and the reality is that the situation in Venezuela is really, you know, I don't think that any country, including Haiti, has gone through a situation like this, and it's inexplicable given the fact that Venezuela is the wealthiest country in this hemisphere, you know, given its oil wealth. So, as I said before, the reason why Venezuela is in the condition it's in today is because of the mismanagement and the incredible corruption that the government of first Chavez and now Maduro have gone through. And, you know, the fact that they didn't invest in critical infrastructure like the electrical system, you know, it collapsed, and it has been collapsed now for over a month. And people, for example, in cities like Maracaibo, one of the wealthiest cities, in fact, that's where the oil comes from. You know, they have energy, electric energy, 1 or 2 hours a day because the government hasn't been able to restore energy. And when you don't have electricity, of course, it affects all of your other public utilities as well. So the situation is absolutely dramatic. Add to that the fact that there was already no supermarkets that would, you know, that available medication, hospitals. So it really is a very dramatic situation that has led now to anywhere between 4 and 5 million people leaving Venezuela since 2016. And they're all over the place. They're at least in 72 countries that we've been able to document. And of course, they've come to the United States. And they have no ability to those who are outside have no ability other than through remittances to help those inside. So it is a dramatic situation. Nathan, I hope your family is fine. But, you know, the reality is that that this is going to go on for a while, and it's likely to get worse for your friends and family there.
Nathan, thanks for the call. We're talking to Eduardo Gamarra from Florida International University about the latest in Venezuela. Eduardo, how, given all the economic disruption, all the problems you're talking about, how does Maduro keep the loyalty of the leaders of the military?
Well, that's a very, very important question, and it's one that from the perspective really of Washington is often hard to figure out. One would expect that given what I just described, that the military would flock to the opposition and that this government would have fallen a long time ago. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, Venezuela, as I said earlier, still produces about 800,000 barrels of oil per day. It still has an income. And then you have to add to that the fact that the Venezuelan government is extraordinarily linked to organized crime. They have linkages backwards and forwards to organized crime in Colombia. They have linkages to the Bolivian cocaine industry. They have linkages across the ocean and throughout the Caribbean through drug trafficking organizations. And, of course, they also have this incredible set of connections with organizations, including what we're now finding information that they're linked, for example, to trafficking organizations in Africa and the Middle East, and even the presence of Hezbollah. And then finally, I think one of the most important things is the fact that the Russians are essentially looking the other way. I think I'm not exactly sure whether the Russians like Maduro, but this is a way to stick it to the United States, right? But I don't think they like Maduro, given what their economic interests are. They're losing money, and they might even be in favor of change. but they don't want a change that the U.S. is going to dominate. So I think that, you know, that Maduro has all of this support. The final connection there is the trafficking of gold that is being done with the collaboration of the government of Turkey. So there are a whole series of these networks that are keeping the government of Venezuela afloat. They can pay salaries, you know, they can pay the bureaucrats that are still with the government, and obviously they can maintain that military apparatus that supports them.
Eduardo, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
That's Eduardo Gamarra, professor of political science and founding director of the Latino Public Opinion Forum at Florida International University. We talked to them about the ongoing situation in Venezuela and U.S. involvement in past conflicts in Central and South America. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, Facebook is rolling out big design changes, and that could affect the online experience for hundreds of millions of users and shake up the social media landscape along the way. We'll find out what's changing, and you can share your thoughts and your hopes or fears maybe for what's going to change online. Our own Stephanie Elkins joins the show for a look at two African-American women composers whose compositions are getting a new look a century later. We'll hear their stories and some of their music along the way. Plus, it's this week's edition of Food Friday. We break down kitchen, gadgets, and gear, what we need, what we want, and what's going to just sit around collecting dust. That and more all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.